outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Chain. The God Chain. The God Chain.
So, Kyle, did you get enough turkey yesterday?
Well, no.
Come on, you can do the time warp thing. We're actually recording this 2 weeks before it airs because we have the space to do it. And Sarah and I are blitzing our way home from here. So we're gonna tape now, and it'll air later. And we've got a special surprise going in between the two.
Well, and there's a lot on my end. There's a lot of anticipation for turkey. So I'm hoping that by the time this airs, my response will be, yes, I consumed a lot of prime rib and a lot of turkey, and both were glorious.
Oh, you do both. Oh, my gosh. Prime rib and turkey. I don't know what I would do. I'd probably eat all the prime rib and never see a turkey.
Yeah, I don't eat a whole lot of turkey.
That's what I would think, yeah.
There's a lot more prime rib that goes down.
Well, Sarah and I have made it to Edmond, Oklahoma, and we're getting snow today. So we started this trip, 105 or some crazy thing when we were in Denver and Wyoming with you. It was hot as could be. We've been through a bit of the end of summer, some fall, and today we're going to get some snow flurries in a couple of hours here in Edmond. It's been raining all day, supposed to change to snow, but fortunately it changes to snow just as the storm ends, so we're not looking for much on the ground. It's still above freezing here, so I don't think it'll stick. We're hoping, and we're supposed to drive out tomorrow and head for Dallas, Fort Worth area.
So I have to know, as you're looking towards anticipation to being back in L.A., in Southern California, right? You're currently facing the proposition of getting snowed on with the sunny skies of Southern California on the horizon. So what is it going to be like to be back in LA? Because once this airs, you guys will be back in LA. Have you thought about what it's going to be like to be back in Southern California after this? I don't even know how to brand this crazy journey that the two of you have been on across the country.
That's the glory of not having to brand it. We haven't branded it either. We've got Return to Innocent Stewart, all kinds of things. No, on the 25th, when we get home, when this airs, we're going to be going to our daughter's place for Thanksgiving dinner with the grandkids that we haven't seen in 3 months. So,
oh, wow.
That will be great fun. As to what our life looks like, moving back into Sarah's apartment, which is a bit of a mess since we kind of crammed things in there before we left. And now Sarah's not like me calling it Sarah's apartment. It's our apartment. But for the first time, we're going to live together in a two-bedroom apartment with a lot of boxes and lots of things to sort through. We really are coming back so far without any plans for what's next. We're going to come back. We're going to sort out the apartment so we can live there. And then we're going to probably look for a home in the area, unless God directs us elsewhere, and we'll see when we find that. But really looking forward when we get back to connecting with our family, connecting with friends in the area we haven't seen for a long time, including Lewis and my friend Lewis thing. So we're going to, we don't know. I still don't know if we've retired. We may have. I got excited the other day for the first time. I could feel that creative urge to get back to the book that I've laid aside since April 11th and got some ideas for how it finishes. So it seems like as we're moving toward that way, when I'm driving, that my thoughts are just all on some writing things and some whatever, and also finding Sarah's wholeheartedness. So it's not on travel a lot. I don't know if I'll be traveling a lot without Sarah at this point. She's got to have some surgery. So that's going to be me at home helping her recover. And that's a pretty long recovery where I've got to do some lifting and stuff for it. It's a rotator cuff surgery. I don't think we have to figure that out yet. Maybe we get home, we'll have to. But right now, this whole trip has been just following those nudges one day at a time. Like even today, we've decided looking at temperatures, because RVs aren't really built to withstand low temperatures, below freezing much. You've got issues with pipes freezing and bursting and things like that. So we're having to choose a more southerly route than we were going to go home. That's going to allow us actually, I think I'm going to get to visit Carlsbad Caverns, which has been a lifetime dream for me. But I think we're going to be able to go down that way and have some time to go out and see that, which will be a lovely capstone. And then we're going to stop in Gilbert, Arizona, outside Phoenix, and got some good friends there. And then we'll head home. Okay. Got a good week in Dallas planned. We're going to meet some people. Oh, I got to tell you this. Last week, I added to the podcast this need in Kenya. I don't know if you noticed, but we got some need with these 300 kids. They need $160,000 to build some dormitories, buy some land, or the state's going to close them down or make them get rid of a number of the children because they've got too many kids compacted in too small a space. Hmm. And so they need $160,000, which I am so tired of raising money for Kenya. Didn't really get excited about it. I got to be honest. I'm just going, oh, God, will this ever end? And $160,000, a lot of bucks. And going back to Lifestreamer, God Journey audience, within 2 days, the need was met. So,
Oh, my gosh.
Yes. I don't even need to mention it as a need here. It has already been met. And
wow.
Yeah. One guy called me and picked up a big piece of that. Just said, listen, I'll take this off the table for you. So very grateful for that. And so it's covered. Mm.
Wow. So do you think you'll ever go back
to California?
I think there was a standing invitation to go back to Kenya and just reconnect with the believers and the community out there. Do you think that that's something you'll potentially do in your semi-near future, or is that even on your radar?
I was scheduled to go the summer that COVID hit, so we had to cancel the trip. I honestly don't know. I don't know about leaving Sarah at this point. I don't have an urge to be there. It costs me an awful lot of money to get there and provide for everybody who's caring for me. That's how these international trips work. Yeah. And I'd much rather put it into the kids. I don't, they want to have a big ceremony, a big thank you and all that stuff. And I know what that looks like, glorifying me. And I already appreciate their gratitude. I don't need to be the honorary chief of some tribe in Kenya or something. So I'm kind of, I don't have a strong leading that way, but that doesn't mean it won't happen. And we can talk about that a little bit because we're going to talk about learning to follow. And I think that if God leads, yeah, I'm going to go. I have no inkling of that at this moment.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Kyle Rice.
And we want to welcome you to this edition of the God Journey. A special Thanksgiving edition, at least the day after.
Yeah.
Because that always, you know, gratitude's kind of on my heart. But before I get to that, I wanted to throw one thing at you that somebody sent me. Not even listen to this podcast, but we talked about parenting. Okay. And someone had sent me a thing that just going through their own personal journey. They were really raised in a conservative thing, and they were learned how to beat their children in a very programmed way to, you know, not spare the rod, spoil the child kind of thing. So very high on the, I mean, there's a whole procedure of putting your knees against the bed, leaning over the bed, or you're laying down with your face in the covers, and then you get whacked good by your mom and dad. And then, and then afterwards, this is what this person is writing. And I'll provide a link to where this blog came from. But she said, I would place my hands by my face and then become as utterly motionless as I could make myself. I was required to be utterly still while she beat me for the entire duration of the beating, or she would start over. On top of being completely still, I had to indicate the appropriate ways that the beating had succeeded, that she had accomplished what the Pearls, which I guess the ones that wrote this book, taught about breaking my will. I couldn't physically resist the spanking, but I could, after a few strikes, begin to tremble. I could cry too loudly or too soon, but if I waited until the last moment to whimper, it would go better for her, I think. And then she says, as my actions met the requirement, she said, we would move to sit together on the bed, me gingerly, while she performed the trauma bonding ritual the Pearls taught was fundamental to their method. This part was always worse and harder than enduring the beating. I would be so incredibly angry, so stuffed full of rage and humiliation and hurt, and I had to pretend that none of those feelings existed. I had to appear repentant, sorrowful, and loving. I had to hug the person who had just beaten me, tell them I loved them, and sound like I meant it, or the whole experience would repeat it again until I was broken. Oh my gosh. I think of the number of kids, and the person who sent me this raised their kids this way and now feels like a complete child abuser in their 40s or 50s looking back. And their kids feel like they were very much abused by this ritualistic flogging system. And I'm really touched by the end of this, where after getting the beating, now you've got to make nice. And when we talked about some of that stuff with God last week and parenting and all that, that's what so many Christians have dealt with in the relationship with God, that they go Sunday morning, get flogged. You know, you're not good enough. You need to try harder, do more. And you've got to act like you love it. And you've got to treat God like you love him when you really see him as an abuser. And I just, This made me so sad. I mean, we spanked our kids. I wouldn't today. We didn't do it this way. It wasn't this. But we've told both of our kids that we really didn't do right by them and wish we had done it differently. And we didn't spank them a lot. It was very rare because our kids didn't need a lot of that. But we did at times. And there's one experience with my daughter that I will forever regret because it was rebellion, and I was trying to make her. I wouldn't use the term break her will, but I was trying to get her to conform with what I wanted. And it was over something so trivial that just didn't make any sense looking back. But at the time, what we were raised in.
Yeah.
And the mother who sent me this doesn't listen to the podcast, so I'm not involved with that. But she said, I think every parent needs to scream from the housetops that this kind of ritualistic beating and then fake loving is traumatizing to a child in every way that we've talked about trauma.
I mean, honestly, as you were reading that, the internal physiological reaction that I was having was severe, significant.
I'm sorry. I didn't think about that. I should have.
Oh, like I honestly was just thinking about that. And it, like, to be bluntly honest, I started getting some cold sweats, honest.
From experiencing things like this.
Yes.
Was it the Pearl system? Was that?
No.
It was
very much a submit to authority type thing. But it was the in part. And you know, and this is the challenge with mental illness and, you know, some of the things that were going on, in my home. But I could have a very violent, whether it be verbal, physical, whatever type interaction, and then 5-10 minutes later, the parent figure is joking with me, and I'm supposed to try to act like there's no, like, that everything's all good, that we can just move forward, that it's all okay, like, yeah. And then when I got the courage to actually call the individual out on the behavior, their response was, what are you talking about? We had a good conversation. And had no memory of the fact that they had screamed and shouted and broken something and come back and done it twice. Wow. Had no recollection of it. In their mind, there was a good conversation and it was a calm conversation and I learned what I needed to learn and we were moving on with the day. And so
I guess it got to the idea where fake conformity was more important than authenticity.
Yes.
And yes. We thought it was discipline. And back in the day, yeah. If I got my child to do what I wanted them to do, even if it didn't come from the heart, it didn't matter. They did the right thing. And how much of our Christian spirituality in a faked up kind of way is exactly that? It's doing the right thing, even if you don't feel it or it's not real in your heart.
And honestly, if I was going to encapsulate one of the primary messages that my parents, I think, wanted to impart to me, and I think they were trained in this by the religious system, was to submit to authority.
Right.
And that they had to train me and break me and do whatever they needed to do in order to bring me into a posture where I was ready to submit to authority.
Yeah. And how much does that express what people believe about God? To bend his will against ours, which is the opposite of how God created us, with the free will to live our lives, even in ways detrimental to ourselves or in defiance of him.
Yeah.
And he gave us that freedom. And then we, in his name, take it away from children, take it away from other people. In legalistic systems,
Well, I was going to say, and that's what we're taught in the system, right? Is that you need to submit to God's authority, and basically, like, very similar to the conversation that you and I had a while ago, where you were talking about not wanting your significant other to be the victim of your decisions. It's like, no, you are the victim of the authority of whatever God chooses. You just need to get over yourself and get in line with it. So whatever that looks like, and as it's being passed down, that's what you need to do. Get in line with it, and then you'll be okay.
And then to stuff down the rage that is the natural response of that is to participate with traumatizing, because you have to stuff down your real emotions, your real struggle, instead of honoring it and getting it healed. If it's wrong, then it gets healed if you can honor it. If you just dismiss it and stuff it, it's just going to come back to get you another day.
Yeah.
So that leads me then to the best thing I heard this week.
I'm intrigued to hear how that is going to bridge into the best thing you heard this week. Okay, go ahead.
And it's the best thing I heard this week in a counterintuitive way. Now, I love the author who said this, and I'm going to resource it because it's written, and it's part of the season, the Thanksgiving season, where you're supposed to have gratitude to God. And I grew up learning Thanksgiving as a discipline, right? So even if you're not really grateful, you've got to, by making yourself be grateful, at least externally. Because one thing Joni and I talked about in last week's podcast, you haven't heard yet, is you can't feel what you don't feel. Mm. You can't know what you don't know. There's a reality to say, you shouldn't feel this way, feel this way. And there's no ability to change the way we feel about the things coming at us, because that's part of our engagement system with circumstances as they unfold. They can be healed, they can be shaped and changed, but you can't feel differently. You can only act like you feel differently. So what, and this is Henry Nouwen, who I love. Henry Nouwen has written so many amazing things. Here, and this is what I wanted to ask you about. He says, gratitude is not a simple emotion or an obvious attitude. It is a difficult discipline to constantly reclaim my whole past in the concrete way in which God has led me to this moment and is sending me into the future. It is hard precisely because it challenges me to face the painful moments, experiences of rejection, abandonment, and feelings of loss and failure, and gradually to discover in them the pruning hands of God purifying my heart for a deeper love, a stronger hope, and a broader faith. And I guess when I read, I like the overallness of that, right? Mm-hmm. But I grew up teaching, or early days of pastoring, we use celebration of discipline. These things like solitude and gratitude and Thanksgiving and all those things. These are things you do against your greater perceptions. And a lot of it became fake it till you make it. You just, you know, God deserves your Thanksgiving. So even if you're not thankful, you've got to put it out there, you know, in some way. And what the reason I love this quote is not because I love it. It's because that in reading this, for someone who has sat here in this RV every day for the last 3 months, looking over at my wife with profound gratitude for what God has done to save us, to rescue us, for what God is giving us in our relationship with each other. I don't come at this Thanksgiving, and I haven't come at the last number of them. I think love, rest, and play, in spite of the difficult circumstances that come, it always just keeps my heart. There's not a night I go to bed that I'm not grateful to God, even in those 3 weeks of utter agony with Sarah, where I couldn't express my gratefulness that I wasn't in this alone, that God was with me, that we would find a way through this, whatever that meant on the other side. And I think when I read this, I went, gosh, I'm a long way from gratitude as a discipline. It's become a lifestyle, a deep personal feeling of gratefulness to how God works and what he does in the world. And I think it's come out of that love, rest, and play. The other idea of God said it, you just do it, you'll be obedient. I lived a lot of my life in that space, and it didn't lead me to gratitude. In fact, I sensed it led to a lot of frustration with God, that God wasn't doing the things I thought he should. And so then to pretend to be grateful, like this child being beaten and pretending to be grateful for being beaten because it's going to help them be better. And, you know, that's why this kind of activated that same thought about going against someone's will, trying to do the right thing externally, and somehow that's supposed to benefit us instead of a journey of salvation that genuinely shapes something in us, for which gratitude is the only possible response at what God has done to break bondages, to set captives free, to bind up broken hearts. And I find myself, and I've said this for a number of years, I can't remember the day. I don't know that I did it the day I got home and read the letter from Sarah, but quickly after that, I don't remember too many days in the last 20 years of my life where I don't put my head on a pillow at night and my last thoughts are just gratitude for what God gave me on this day, gratitude for what he's revealed in my life. And that's even on the painful bits. And there have been painful days in the last few years, for sure.
Yeah. Man, I'm not entirely even sure where to start with that. I love...
Well, do you see gratitude as a discipline? Is that how you approach it? Or were you taught to approach it that way?
To be honest, gratitude wasn't really much of the... It wasn't really in my dialogue. It wasn't even language that was really used until I got into the mental health world. And then they started talking about posturing your heart in this place of gratitude, going through the remembrances of gratitude and the way that it both changes the chemical and physiological makeup of your body and of your mind. Wow. By going through the process of being gratitude or being grateful. And I remember the first time that I did it, I sat down with a therapeutic journaling exercise that we were asked to do. And they said, I want you to write down 150 things that you're grateful for. And so I was like, okay, that should be easy. And so I get into it and I made it to about 50. And then all of a sudden, like, it drew the conversation into a whole nother level of a recognition of the gratefulness for physiological health, a gratefulness for deeper long-term healing, a gratefulness for some of the relationships that have been in my life, at not just like saying that person, but this is what that person has offered to me or modeled to me or mirrored to me. And it took it to a whole different level. And I remember getting done with that and being like, wow, that started it here, like at surface level. Yeah, and by the time I was at 150, we were very much existential and we were moving into a whole nother space.
But it wasn't faked gratitude. It was finding places. That's what I think. I react to this thing from now on a little bit because I think what I got from the behavioral conformity thing I grew up with is you faked it. I mean, you God wanted to hear words of gratitude from you, even if you didn't mean it. To worship services with, this is the day the Lord has made, I'll rejoice and be glad in it. And we sing it 15 times until the congregation is happy enough to prove they mean the song, which isn't necessarily that it meant it, but we've got to pretend we mean it, or we're not going to get on from this stupid song, which we just sang 55
times. We're
going to
still be sitting in the pew. Yeah.
And I think the cheap thing to do is get the behavioral conformity in a place where the heart isn't. And I think Henry Nouwen is really pressing to, you know, look through your painful circumstance and find the thing that you're grateful for. That all of your life, every bad thing that's happened has shaped you for this moment. And this moment has equipped you for moments to come. And I think he really is saying that in a real way. It just activated in my heart that thing of looking back going, man, I remember when gratitude was a discipline. Mm. And I didn't really feel it, but I knew God deserved it. So I came up with stuff. Somewhat genuine, but my heart wasn't in a posture of gratitude. I'd get my lips to express it, but my heart wasn't in sync, which made me think of this poor girl who'd been beaten by her mom and then is supposed to be grateful or supposed to express love and when it's not there yet. And why do we value, again, why do we value conformity over authenticity? And I think that's the struggle we who were schooled in religion always have.
I think one of the things that, as you were reading the quote to me, that really connected with me as he was talking about going through the painful bits was what you and I had been talking about a few podcasts ago about not shoving down the pain, but staying in the pain, holding space for pain, and being able to work through that and seeing healing in that. And for me, that's even the idea that I could hold space for my pain. It's like, ooh. That's an amazing blessing, Lord, to be in a safe enough space where it's like, no, I can actually hold on to that. I can stay with it. I can be in it and I can let God walk me through that. And I'm not in the place of such heightened survival that I don't have to shove it down and put it in a box and put it on the shelf. Because if I look at it or hold space for it at all, I'm not going to make it. It'll overwhelm me. It'll be too much.
Yeah, you did listen to last week's podcast, because that's exactly what Joni and I talked about, was holding space. She wanted to know what I meant for that, because we'd talked about it in the meeting before, and she'd heard me use it quite a bit. What does it mean to hold space for pain? And I turned it on her, because I said, do you do it? She said, yeah. So good. Then what does it look like for you?
Yeah.
Because this could have been the best thing I heard last week, but we were listening to a podcast someone sent us, and one of the things he said was, that the Beatitudes says, blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. And if we don't mourn, and what trauma does, right, a lot of it is I'm stuffing down the grieving emotions. Yeah. And what Joni says last week, I want relief. I don't want release. I just want, and relief is I shove it down and I never mourn. And we were with someone last week that went through a horrible thing over a decade ago. And I just asked them if they've mourned that. And they just immediately teared up because they hadn't yet. And I love what this says. And she, you know, she thought she had, she'd tried to, she'd done all those things, but really giving place to your pain and holding it there as God makes himself known in it, whether it's through comfort or explanation or whatever. When you mourn it, you get comforted. And I don't mean like that happens within a half an hour, an hour.
Yeah.
Mourning can be days and weeks and months. But when I mourn with him inside, I don't run from the emotions. I don't, you know, slap some things in my life or go, you know, run off to Disneyland to be happy. But I actually sit in my pain as God makes himself known in my pain. Then the more those who mourn get comforted, and those who don't mourn get traumatized because they just stuff down that pain somewhere where it's not accessible to them. They even may forget it while they're carrying it. But as we've said, the body keeps the score and it's eventually going to surface at some point.
Well, and it's interesting to look at the comparison between relief versus release, right? And I think about all the different ways that we try to medicate ourselves in order to get brief relief. We're looking for that, whatever that might be, we're looking for that brief relief from that space. And yet it takes more of that medication, whether that be religious performance, whether that be substance abuse, whether that be, I mean, the list goes on and on and on. And yet until there's a release of that, until there's release and the healing and the restoration of that, oh my gosh, like it just takes more and more and more relief or medication in order to be able to manage and in order to be able to live.
For sure.
What? Why are you smiling? Like I'm seeing these facial expressions. It's like there's more going on in your head right now as you're listening to me say this.
No, I'm looking at the time of where I could go 4 hours on this kind of topic with this because I think it's so powerful. And also, I mean, we wanted to get to on the podcast today because there's a way we want to get back to this little chart we've been doing for a while.
Which you said you're going to add to. You're going to add a whole nother addition to it, I guess, as of this week.
Not to the whole chart. To this part up here we haven't gotten to yet.
Yep.
But in the bottom part of the chart, if those of you don't remember or haven't listened until more recently, we've been working through how love transforms. God's revelation to us, God reveals things to us that's very relational, even in the midst of our pain and struggles, what we're talking about. And when we ponder that and hold it and then come to believe the things that God's saying to us, that helps us embrace his love. And in that love, we get to enjoy this love, rest, and play. The relationship is defined by that. And what the next thing that we haven't got to yet is out of love, rest, and play, we'll find ourselves following him. And I mean, quite organically, naturally, love, rest, and play opens me to a different perspective, lens, a reality of what God's doing in my day, my circumstances. Now I have the freedom to follow. And I guess one of the things that I've thought about with this is that we cut short this process. We've just kind of, well, God revealed, and you just do it, and you follow God by doing what he says. And it's all that we've been talking about whether it's gratitude or discipline or whatever, pretend you like it, do it, because that's what your salvation depends upon. And where I like putting follow, where I feel like it belongs in this process, is in the pondering and believing. And that growing sense of love, rest, and play. We're kind of inside his love. We're at rest in his work. So we're not depending on us. As Sarah said, didn't I love what she said. It said, I can't even fix myself. So holding your pain, loving you is not about fixing you. It's about being with you and holding you. And I love that. I mean, that's only someone at rest in what God's doing that can say that and knows that what's changed in my life hasn't been by my strength, my power, anything. It's been by his work, which he's done as I've enjoyed his presence and walked in him. So then playing with him, and then in the play, following him becomes an organic expression of I'm opening this door, and you see it and you're nudged and you follow. And the following is not the strict obedience, lay down your life and follow me. There are times when what God asks me to do directly confronts my will.
Yeah.
But out of love, rest, and play, knowing his is the better way, not I want my way, I got to have it, God. You know, now I know, okay, I would rather do this, or this is going to leave a mark. This thing God's asking me to do is going to leave a mark. But yeah. Out of the play and the rest and the love of God, following becomes something so much richer to do. So not a discipline, not a have to. And even the hard stuff is whether it takes you like Jesus to Gethsemane, which is I've got to get in that space where I don't want to do my will. I want to do his, not because I have to, or I'm going to go to hell, or he's going to punish me in some way, but because I want to be part. If there's another way to do this, God, let's do it. If this is the only way, I'm in no matter what it costs me. And that's the kind of following I think that changes the world.
Yeah, but I love the context in which you're putting following, right? Because often for me anyway, when I was first learning what this God thing might be and how to follow Jesus, a lot of it was just getting over it, right? Like that was the first thing I had to do was I didn't really get to know him. No, I didn't really get to know his character, but because he's God, I've got to submit and I need to just follow whatever he says. Like, I just need to go along with it. That no, oof.
And a lot of that is horrible misapplications of scripture, isn't it?
Yeah.
You had an aha moment there, didn't you?
Yeah. This might go into a whole nother space. We may have to cut this part out, but, Jess and I have been working with some marriage coaches that have just been helping us navigate some really painful, just challenging seasons in our marriage. You know, Jess has been navigating some things personally and mentally, and then having some postpartum depression. And then in the midst of that, that's been drawing some of my stuff and my survival things to the surface and finding out they're just as maladaptive as the other stuff. And one of the things that when we were talking with them was, this was the coach that brought out the, I want to be able to, like, they asked me the freedom question. And I said, I just want to be able to give a guilt-free no. And so we were talking this week, and the conversation came up, and she was like, and it was basically, no wasn't an option. That wasn't an option. That was what that submission meant. There was no such thing as a no. It was yes. And how high? That was it. And man, like, God is just so kind, because even when he's asking me to do something, and he knows it's outside of my threshold of rest, love, and play, and trust, right? Like, he's creating that invitation, and he knows that it's still outside of that threshold. And yet, like, literally, like, he's the first person that I've recognized that he started to teach me that it's okay to have a guilt-free no. And literally to him, that it doesn't change my value in him. It doesn't change the level of interaction that I have with him. But when it feels, when there's something that's like, Lord, I don't know. I don't know about that yet. It's okay if you say no to me, Kyle. It's okay. Mm-hmm. Like, I love you enough and I'm walking with you enough that it's okay for you to tell me no. And that, man, like,
well, that'll blow the Pharisees out of the water on it.
Seriously. And to have, like, the ultimate being that you're supposed to never say no to be the first person that invites you to say a guilt-free no.
The difference between the authoritarian God and the healing God. Because I think, yeah. Does God want us to say yes to him about everything? Yeah, because he doesn't, he's not just asking us to do something difficult. He knows the best way through whatever we're going through. Correct. So to have the freedom to follow, and I think this is what love, rest, and play does, the freedom to follow with a wholehearted yes. Yeah. Not a held hostage yes or an extorted yes.
Or a victim's yes, exactly.
Yeah, but a wholehearted yes. And one of my favorite moments in the shack is Matt coming back from the cave and meeting with Papa and the whole thing about, gosh, I am aware now of how many times I've disobeyed you. And Papa looks at him and says, oh, Mac, the first time I ask you to do something, I know it'll take 22 times of my asking before we'll build a bridge of love enough for you to cross. I love that language because it's not focused on God told me I'm doing it. So now you're disobedient. And that's what I grew up in. There's obedience to God and there's disobedience. And if you're disobedient, then no, it's God inviting us into a wholehearted obedience, which comes out of love, rest, and play. That I know what God wants. And even when it's going to challenge me, I know his way is better than my way. And I know the following of him will be to my benefit as well as his in the kingdom and all those things. And maybe my manipulated yes will not accomplish the same fruit. I think that's what we have to know. Yeah. So if we do say, God, I don't think I can do this now, please shape my heart. I think God loves that. I just think he does. And it invites us back into the space where our yeses to him come out of this growing confidence in his love, his work, and our play with him. This whole trip has been that way for Sarah and I. We left without knowing where we were going, when we were going to get back. We've just day to day, a week at a time, kind of where do you think we ought to go? Almost. And I did this a lot in the early days until we were too far out. But I kept saying, do you want to go home yet? Because we're going home and Sarah wants to go home. I could keep doing this. I could keep doing it right through the – except it's getting a little cold. So we're going to be down on the very bottom of the United States of America, going through New Mexico and Arizona. It's cold down there. The further north you go, the colder it is. So I'm not really – unless we got to Florida, which no one wants to be in Florida really. At least I don't this time of year. But apologies to those of you who live there. But even I hear from some of them, it's tough living in Florida, unless you're retired. And I don't know what they're doing there. You're sitting with the air conditioner all day. But, man, I could keep doing it. But we were going to go home, and Sarah wanted to go home. And Sarah's ready to go home. So now we're going to go home. But the following of where we go, and then we went to places just because of some weird connection. And it turned out to be more fruitful than we could have even imagined. And we've just wandered through the whole of the United States that way and seeing God do us. That's why I come out of this. And even how this journey started, getting through Sarah's trauma together, learning to walk in it together. There's a whole lot of saying yes to nudges that God gave us. Mm-hmm. That if we hadn't followed those nudges, we wouldn't be where we are today. That this was a very narrow track and we could have missed it. And even if we did, God would have loved us and been with us. And I've said that before. If we were apart still, God would still be loving Sarah, working on her. He'd be loving me, leading me to what new things he has for me. That God's ways to get us through life are eternally creative and never ending. And no to him is going to put us so far off track that we'll never find our way to his light again in life. It's all an invitation. I do. I mean, God's saying, I do want you to follow me.
Yeah.
But I don't want to be drag you down the sidewalk by the hand with you kicking and screaming. I want your wholeheartedness. And we can work on that together. We can win that together. And that to me is the best of it. So, I like the freedom to say to God, I can't do that right now. I can't.
Yeah.
And know that that doesn't mean you get rejected, that God staked everything on your conformity. He doesn't. He treasures your authenticity. It's wholehearted love and devotion he wants, not the pretense of it, not the fear-induced acting like I do, but the love-motivated, oh, God, I want to go this way. I may not be ready for it yet. That engagement with God, I think, is transformative. And that's what I love about this chart. I love putting follow right here because instead of I can't follow right now or I can't even see to follow, then I come back to love, rest, and play. How are you developing these things in me? Because at play, I see opportunities I don't see when I'm working hard for God. when I'm trying to keep his, when I'm trying to appease him with my performance. Yeah. I'm doing a lot of Wayne stuff in the name of God, but I'm not doing God stuff as his beloved follower, beloved child. And I think the whole life of the kingdom lays in the following. Not just I'm doing religious stuff, begging God's blessing, but I'm living in God's wisdom, which is God's blessing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Through hard stuff, through joyful stuff, through whatever.
And I think that that's honestly, I think that that we talked a little bit about the salvation in the here and now, in the day to day. And I think that's very much what it means to draw, because it's not bringing you into ultimate conformity. It's bringing you into fully alive, into complete wholeheartedness, right? And to, for him to say like, no, I don't want you. Like, I know, and I have really realized and seen and experienced the love of God being the source of life, that his way is the best way. I've seen that, known that. And yet, at times, like, for him to say, no, 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 no. I want this to be a wholehearted yes. I want this to not be a manipulated yes, not a submitted yes, not a victimized yes, but a
God's going to lower yes the boom on my head if I don't say yes.
Yes, exactly, exactly. And in the midst of that, it's just to be able to say, okay, God, I'm not sure if I'm okay with that yet. Like, I know that you're continuing to win me into a place where I can trust you there, but I don't know if I can yet. And him be like, that's okay. I like, there's no change in your value or my love for you or my desire to have relationship with you.
Yeah. Again, God treasures authenticity.
Yeah.
And so where we can say wholeheartedly, yes, great. Where we can't, then even the struggle to follow comes inside the love, rest, and play, so that I get to learn what allows me to wholeheartedly embrace what God might ask of me, might challenge me to. But for the most part, I mean, I know people, when we talk about following, it's these major mission tasks God wants to do. Most of the following is just being with him, watching what he does and people to love along the way. It's not go do some great thing for God, go, you know, go over and challenge Putin and, you know, whatever, and get locked in a gulag for Jesus or something. It's not that. The following, I mean, what God does to invite us into following. And then most of it is just hanging out near him, and you end up in circumstances you never would have chosen, but the following got you there.
Yeah,
and that's where you look back like now and said, everything, I said this before about what Sarah and I went through recently, everything that went on in my life, the betrayals of other people, the hurts I'd been through, the brokenness, the lying of other people, all of that prepared me to be in this moment a different guy than I would have been 5 years ago, 15 years ago, 30 years ago. And I love that. I love that God has shaped that in my heart in a way that allows me to follow him differently. And I look forward to whatever that's going to mean ahead, because we're coming back from this trip. Like you said, I have no idea what life is going to be for us. I've got no ministry plans. I've got no, we keep asking, have we retired? Is this retirement? Just Sarah and I being together, going shopping together, getting groceries together. I don't know. I have no idea. But I my love, rest, and play with God. And now Sarah and I are love, rest, and playing in a way we've never done before. And there's lots of growth to still come there. We're not complete full. But I love that love, rest, and play not only defines my relationship with God, it's also now defining Sarah and my relationship together. And through that, we have a healthier way to relate to each other. And again, authenticity over conformity, wholeheartedness over demanded obedience. And this is the kingdom, man. This is why Christ died and what he invited us into.
That's salvation.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com